Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dribble Podcast. My name is Craig O'Donoghue from the West Australian newspaper, and throughout this summer, I'll be bringing you all the news and interviews for everything to do with basketball in WA. Isn't a week a hell of a long time in sport? Last week, the Wildcats were in crisis. Now, they've won two games in a row, including a thrilling overtime win over Melbourne, and suddenly, everyone is smiling again. And I'm pleased to say we will have Perth Wildcats coach John Rilley in studio as our guest today. And then we'll hear from Perth Lynx star Mila Goodchild, who has some remarkable stories to tell. And if you're a fan of the TV show Survivor, you will not want to miss that one. But before we talk hidden immunity idols, the Perth Wildcats had a weekend where they showed they can outwit, outplay and outlast with a back-to-back winning weekend, which has changed the course of their season.
They keep the Wolves away from the door after a tumultuous week. Winners 99-88. The Wildcats stare adversity in the face and go 2-0 on the weekend. Just like that. The Wildcats season is back on track.
Yes, the Wildcats season is back on track, and I'm pleased to say their coach, John Rilley, is here in the studio with us today. John, thanks for joining the Dribble Podcast.
No worries, Craig.
Did breakfast taste a little bit better this morning?
Look, with that intro, half this stuff that you guys talk about when I do something like this is the first time I hear the commentating and anything like that. So if I feel good, breakfast always tastes good. And you have to appreciate the finer things in life.
The finer things in life are always good after a win. You've made some big changes, which has helped this team to come around, like moving Jordan Usher to the bench, Jesse Wagstaff more time, Hiram Harris more of a role. When did you sort of sit down and go, this is what we need to do and let's see how it works?
Look, when you're not playing good, you just sit in a room in your office, wherever, and ponder how you can maybe help and tinker with the team so you get obviously some wins, but how can you just create a little momentum through play? And you've seen with the improved play of Doolittle, Christian Doolittle, the enthusiasm and energy that Wagstaff and Hiram Harris play with, we're finding our feet right now.
I love the energy that those guys have brought to the team. Can you feel it straight away on the sidelines that they just bring something that makes everyone get up and about?
Yeah, look, the game the other night against Adelaide home, Hiram had three offensive rebounds in the first quarter. And then I talked about it, you're like passing the baton to the next guy that comes in. They see that effort and energy, they want to continue that on. And over the course of this weekend, that's what we did. The next man coming in produced, like David Aquera come in for 4 minutes, I think it was, against Melbourne, and he hasn't played for a couple games, and he brought great energy and effort to his time on the floor.
People have been intrigued by Jesse all season. He started, he hasn't played at different times, he's had a big milestone, he didn't get on court at his celebration sort of game afterwards, and then last night he does some amazing things and helps the team. There's such a fascination about him because of who he is and what he can do for this group. Mm-hmm. Has that been hard to sort of deal with when you're trying to plan for his minutes and the reaction to him at the moment?
Look, I think what you saw over the weekend, we're kind of morphing into who we will become. And I guess for the way Jesse approaches his profession, he is my security blanket. I've said that for quite a while, is I know what he's going to give us. So there are some times where you're trying to figure out where other guys fit in that puzzle, knowing what Jesse can do. And we found a good balance right now.
So you said a couple of weeks back, you know what he can do, and that's good and bad in different ways for you as a coach. When you're trying to work out what everybody else can do and you don't necessarily know what they can do for this group and where they slot in, has that been a bit why he hasn't necessarily had as much of a say because other blokes are trying to find their role?
Yeah, and look, at the start of the season, he was starting until we felt comfortable with where Doolittle would be on the team, and then he gets injured, we're not playing so good, and now Doolittle's potentially our starting three man with Ush moving to the bench. So then Jesse becomes, you know, his role within that group and the rotations that I'm finding, he becomes a key piece to that. And you saw that against Melbourne United.
I was doing some maths earlier today. I'm not great at maths, but that's fair to say I was better at English than maths. But 200 minutes you got to play with.
Yep.
Bryce gets 38 of them, guaranteed.
Yep.
You're going to give Pinder and Doolittle 25 to 30 for each of those. And then when you start working your way backwards, people are going to miss out all the time, aren't they? How do you handle them, and how do you want people to view your team knowing that there just aren't enough minutes for everybody to go around?
Well, firstly, the couple of different points you ask in that question. It's very important for myself and our staff to have great communication and just sweat equity with our guys away from what the public sees. So on our days off, what are we doing? So those guys feel comfortable that they're, our plan and their own, you know, their own wants and needs are getting met. And we're both being very realistic about where that is. You know, so look, we just spend a lot of time with them. That can be on the court, off the court, watching film. Because as you said, like a lot of those minutes are spoken for before the ball even gets tipped.
I find you in a really interesting position at the moment. You're in charge of such an intense organisation, an intense fan group, a big focus on this group. I reckon I've interviewed you 100 times since you've been here. And the person I see away from those interviews and away from games is a more relaxed, happy person that I see during interviews and during games. There's a lot of focus on your intensity.
Yep.
How do you come down?
How do I come down? I just relax, go home, enjoy the outdoors. And when I say the outdoors, that's, you know, the beach or walking around somewhere like Kings Park, spending time with people that I appreciate. And look, basketball's my life. As I was driving to this, I figured 16 years pro playing. This is my 14th in the coaching side of things. So 30 years. So I've made it last. It's a tough profession, but to make it last 30 years and hopefully a few more to go, you got to have an intensity. It's what I get judged on.
Would you like people to see the other side of you a little bit more, or do you not care what people think of you? Because I remember when you were in here last year with your son, he was having a bit of a laugh and trying to avoid the cameras and avoid being anywhere near a microphone. You were having a giggle with him there, but you haven't got your family here at the moment. So I reckon you're in a unique position that your life is full basketball, even when you go home, I would have thought.
Whether my family's here or not, I'm full of basketball. I have two sons that play college basketball. And it's my life. It's my livelihood. I guess the one thing people probably don't understand about athletes, coaches. So when I was 17, 18, 19, I worked in an abattoir in Toowoomba, Queensland, where I cut up bacon so I could make enough money to take myself to college in the US to see where basketball could take me. So when you couldn't work in the bacon room, I get sent to the kill floor so I could make more money, so I wouldn't get sent home and my paycheck would be short. So if anyone's been on the kill floor, you, as a 17, 18-year-old, you're working with guys that have been working a knife for 20 years. So as they're carving the beast, they enjoy having a bit of fun with the 18-year-old picking up whatever you can imagine on the floor. So they throw it at you. That's their fun for the day. My fun was getting paid so I could get to the U.S. So what I've gone through, what you guys paint as what I've gone through the last 2 or 3 weeks, that's nothing.
Yep.
That's nothing. Like, bring it on. Like, I've survived. I've made it work. I'll continue to make it work.
So with that in mind, this is your dream. This is what you've built towards.
Yep.
I've said the same thing to Scott Morrison when he was over here, that he was a different person on camera to off camera. And the person who I got to know was that a lot of people didn't get to see.
Uh-huh.
And it was hard, I reckon, from an image perspective, how people look at you and perceive you and stuff like that. What would you like? How would you like Wildcats fans to see you, I suppose, would be the way? Because you are an energetic, intense person, but you're also the person who's guiding such a big franchise that they want to love as well.
You're right. Look, that I think that takes time. Like any relationship takes time. The easiest way to win fans over is by winning and winning big. We haven't done that yet. But does that discourage me from why I came here to be the head coach of the Perth Wildcats and where I think this franchise can continue to be successful? No. Like my playing career, there was ups and downs. People only look at someone's highlights or their lowlights. They don't look at the journey. They don't go, well, this will work out, because he stays the journey.
You mentioned going for walks through Kings Park. It's been a few fires out there
lately.
Like, what is your life? So talk us through. Are you into music? Are you into movies? Are you into TV? Are you into outside of basketball? What are you? What's your go-to to relax, or what's your go-to to enjoy yourself and bring a smile that we're now seeing on your face?
Basketball. Yeah, like that it, besides my family, and I tell, like, when I talked to the team, I don't know, a week ago, when we were not traveling so flash, there's three things I care about. My wife, my kids, and basketball. Now, yeah, we need other outlets. I try to wind down by listening to a podcast or some meditation or something like that, or Netflix comedy or something like that. But basketball is my life, and that's who I am.
So would you say you have a work-life balance, or is your work-life balance a work balance and life will fit in somewhere afterwards?
No. Like, I would say as I've matured, I've found a better way of handling all of that stuff. Like, when I was a player, I was, like, consumed. Like, if it was the night before a game, my wife and I probably going out wasn't probably high on the priority list, because I would have been using energy that I needed for the game, where, you know, I don't look at it like that. Probably utilize my time better. So when I am around my family, or I do need to disassociate myself from basketball, I don't feel like I'm getting behind or I'm not up to speed with what I need to for my job.
Your family's still in the US. When was the last time you saw all of them? I know there were some who were here for a little portion.
Yeah, so July and August, because we were back there to play the G League Ignite. So I was lucky enough to see them then.
And how long did you spend in the US when you had that break during the season? Oh, or during the off season?
Yeah, look, when our season's done and my commitments here, I'd take my long service, or, you know, my annual leave, I guess it would be, is, you know, I go over there and spend a month or whatever with them.
So where are they all based?
California still? Yeah.
Nice place to live, isn't it?
It is. But, you know, when you have a teenage daughter finishing up high school, you have to be a smart and wise parent and help your kids become successful. And that was a good situation for her to remain in.
Do you see that as a big sacrifice, having to leave? Like, everyone over there and you here, it's a pretty empty house when you go home.
Yeah, look, but that's the choice we've made. You know, my wife and I have been together for decades. So we understand sacrificing for each other and then for our family. So we just felt like at this stage in our life, this was beneficial for everyone. But it's tough on sometimes, you know.
How are the boys going with their basketball?
Yeah, look, good. As far as our own situation, like, everyone's thriving in what they're doing. So I get the opportunity to be a head coach of a successful franchise. My wife gets to do her thing, and my kids are going beautifully in life.
Do you have a plan for them being over here and settling back into Australia, or yeah, are they always, do you reckon, going to be college and US because that's all they know?
No, look, my eldest son, he was out here and did preseason with us for the first 3 weeks. When I originally got the job, my wife and daughter were, the plan was for them to move over once we found my daughter a school. But then she enjoys volleyball, has aspirations to be a collegiate volleyballer. So probably Southern California is a better spot than Perth, Western Australia, to pursue volleyball.
Yeah, it's fair to say volleyball isn't a big Australian sport, yeah, isn't it? How much talent does she have?
That's for someone else to decide. You know, she's a 16-year-old girl figuring life out.
I'll rephrase then. What's she doing at the moment? What level is she competing at?
Look, she'll play college volleyball at some level. What that level is, that she's got a couple of years to get that sorted out.
Does it excite you as someone who's coached at the college level to know what their lives can become because of that system over there, at the opportunity through education, through contacts, through sport, what their lives would look like compared to what most people grow up here experiencing?
Yeah, look, all three of my kids were born in Australia. And then last year I had my middle child with me doing like a gap year. I actually thought there would be part of him where he would want to stay here. Just because of the lifestyle, his type of personality. But the college athletics drug him back. So my wife and I are very open-minded, and, you know, we certainly don't think going to the U.S. college is the be-all and end-all for everyone. You got to pursue life in your own journey, and we want our kids to pursue what they want to challenge themselves to.
Outside of basketball, what other sports do you like? Are you a U.S. sports fan, or are you an Aussie sports fan?
Oh, all of the above. It's Melbourne Cup Day, but I have nothing to do with horse racing, though.
Join the club?
Yep. So, like, all the footy codes, obviously basketball. And when I say basketball, I'll watch college, NBA, Europe. You know, all levels, so I'm not fussy on it.
What's your footy team?
Oh, NRL, Canberra Raiders.
Canberra Raiders?
Yes.
NRL, of course. You're from Queensland, aren't you?
Yeah.
So when you're from Queensland, how do you end up as a Canberra person?
So when Canberra Raiders first kicked off, the majority of that team were Queenslanders, or the most important pieces were. Mel Meninga, that was like a childhood legend of mine, so he went to Canberra. So that's why I follow the Canberra Raiders.
Are you a beach person?
Yeah. Like, I have a boogie board and I enjoy catching some waves, absolutely.
We saw you catch up with Justin Longmuir from Fremantle the other week, and you said you wanted to catch up with as many different coaches as you can. Are there any others you can name who you've got relationships with, either here or overseas?
No, like Justin's by far the one that I forged the best relationship with here in Perth to date. That is one of the negatives when you spend some of your time in the off-season overseas, is that's the best time for me to network. But, yeah, I've spent a couple meetings with Justin and just spent some time, and we talk about head coaching stuff.
He's obviously over in America as well. Now doing some meetings. It does seem like all sports look after each other when it comes to coaching.
Yeah, and since I'm in the head coaching role 18 months now, and just especially in the last 2 to 3 weeks, the people that reach out to you just to check in and make sure you're doing all right, it's a club that's growing for me.
You didn't have any head coaching experience before you came here, so it's a big step to go from assistant coach, never done the head coach position before, and then take on a club like the Wildcats. Has it been different to what you thought it would be? Because you would have been coming in with your eyes wide open, but how different has it been?
I guess the biggest thing is when you're an assistant coach, you're creating you're collecting all of this stuff that you think you'll use as a head coach in basketball, X's and O's. And then you get into the job and it's more managing people, you know, spending time with them away from basketball, so you get to understand who they are as people, so you can connect with them a little bit better and coach them a little bit better. And then you finally go, all right, now we can get some X's and O's going. So, you know, my actual advice for anyone that's a budding head coach for the first time is it's your experience in just situations versus you collecting copious amounts of data basketball-wise that's going to get you through your first year or two.
Had you experienced anything like that last 20-odd seconds of regular time with the mayhem that happened against Melbourne? There was fouls, there was coaching challenges, there was more fouls, there's free throws being missed, there's free throws being made. Like, it was pretty hectic, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, but I think it was 1997. I was involved in a game, Adelaide versus Brisbane, where it was a little controversial finish, and we lost. We made what we thought was a game-winning heroic play, and then Brisbane come back with supposedly 0.3 seconds. They made quite the spectacular play in 0.3 seconds. So having gone through that as a young player, and when we thought we'd won the game and you celebrate because there was 0.3 seconds on the clock and then you lose it, it comes full circle. So last night, like, so much can happen in a short amount of time.
Did you see the NBL today have come out and said that the coach's challenge you had, where you were successful, that was the correct decision was made in that situation, but the foul call on the floor was wrong, and under the rules they can't change the foul call when they do the review. So if they had have called a chopping foul, then it would have been unsuccessful. They called a push, therefore you get the challenge, and Melbourne just have to cop the fact that the foul existed, but it was the wrong call.
Right.
Do you like the way the coaching challenge system is set up when you consider that they could see a foul on the review, but they couldn't actually call the foul on the review?
How long's a piece of string?
Yeah, it's long.
Yeah. So that's where I go with that, is the rules are in place. Everyone understands that that can potentially happen. That's probably not the first time that that's happened this year, but because it's in that moment, it gets a little bit more attention.
Yeah, I do remember you trying to call a coach's challenge at one point, and the ref saying, no, you can't call a coach's challenge for that. And you've looked at it and gone, well, why not? There are a lot of loopholes, aren't there,
correct,
in this rule?
Yeah. Well, loopholes, or like so many rules, that's why you ask those questions. So, the rules are the rules. I'll adjust them or change them in time, and that's why you play. And they said they made the right call, correct?
Yeah, under the rules, they made the correct decision.
We're all playing by the same rules.
How do you handle your group this week after an overtime game? There's more minutes they've just played. Do you give them a bit of a rest, given it's a short break before the next game?
Yeah, we strategically limit some guys up until we really ramp it up on Thursday to prepare. Obviously I get a little nervous about the success and the energy expanded over the last week leading into this weekend's game. So I don't want to say it's a danger game because you hope you're building momentum, but we need to come prepared for the New Zealand Breakers.
Crowd was up and about for the last game against Adelaide here. The energy in the building was massive. I imagine you'd be hoping that those fans can bring the same level of energy for you and help you get over the line again.
Yeah, look, the fans, like, they always bring the energy and the passion. That's the one thing that you know that's going to be in that building. So I think as we continue to grow and they appreciate our style of play and who this team is becoming, we can produce them with some moments that give them the boost and the energy as well.
Well, good luck. Hopefully it goes well for you this weekend. I really appreciate you coming in.
No worries. Thank you.
Well, Perth Lynx opened their WNBL season with an impressive 85-71 win over Sydney Flames on Friday night. New captain Annalee Maley followed up her interview on The Dribble last week by setting a new club rebounding record. She dragged in 21 boards in a dominating display. But she wasn't the only player on Lynx debut to have a big impact.
Extra pass, Goodchild for three.
Goodchild knocks it in from the near corner.
Goodchild for three. That looks good.
Good pass to Goodchild. Second three ball.
Big three from Goodchild from the right corner.
Yes, Mila Goodchild was outstanding in her first game for the Perth Lynx. Mila, welcome to the Dribble Podcast.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Now, I fully intend to ask you about some basketball during this interview. In fact, a lot about basketball during this interview. But your dad and sister are on Survivor, and that's the most exciting thing that I've discovered about you whilst I was doing this recording, whilst doing some research. So tell me how the hell you become a Survivor family.
Yes, actually really crazy because I was over in college and, you know, as a family we used to watch it growing up. But, yeah, pretty much I'd like heard Brie like apply for it and everything. And I was like, oh, yeah, awesome. And then next minute, yeah, I'm over in America on the other side. And I hear that she's made it to the final round. And because it was blood versus water season, she needed a family member. She did ask me, but obviously overseas couldn't. But, yeah, ended up getting dad. And, yeah, pretty crazy, honestly. Pretty cool also.
More than pretty cool. She was on there with the legendary Sandra as well, who's won it a couple of times. You could have been on it. Like I said, she invited you on, but could've. You were too busy dominating for Duke.
Yeah, I chose probably my strength basketball over being stranded. But, yeah, no, she was with Sandra. I actually ended up meeting up with Sandra because she was living in North Carolina where Duke is. So after graduation, like, Brie came over and we actually all met up. So, yeah, it was pretty cool.
That's more than cool. Were you fanning out over something like that? Because I know you've said before that you are a fan of Survivor. So when you meet someone like that, what was it like? Was she the ultimate hero sort of moment in a way?
Yeah, it was like different because like obviously it's like reality TV, but yeah, it was really cool because I was like, I've definitely like, you know, seen her in all the shows and that growing up, and then her daughter, we met as well, and she was her first time on Survivor. But yeah, it was just kind of like, yeah, a bit surreal seeing them on TV and then in real life. Yeah.
And your dad got a nickname, Juicy Dave. That's a cool name.
Yeah, no, Dad was a legend. Yeah. No, he did really well and went really far. And, yeah, obviously he got a few nicknames along the way. So hilarious.
Well, no offence, but you're going to have to do a hell of a lot in your basketball career to top Juicy Dave, I reckon. That's from a nickname perspective and being on Survivor perspective, it's pretty cool. Like, so tell me, coming over here to Perth, what was the thing that lured you to the Lynx this season?
Yeah, I'd say the main thing that lured me in was just the style of play. I mentioned before, but, like, yeah, it is very much, like, does suit my style of play. It's kind of like a glove. You know, it's fast-paced, a lot of threes, just kind of like running gun. So, yeah, that style of play just really attracted me, and I thought, I definitely fit the style.
So really impressive against the Flames. You had 11 points and just your energy that you bring this team. You've gone from someone who was part of the rotation off the bench at Melbourne last year to a genuine starter over the course of one preseason. What's been the big thing that's clicked for you since the end of last season, where you were getting sometimes, often big minutes, but sometimes not as many minutes, to suddenly being in the five?
Yeah, I think obviously continuing to evolve as a player and just really know what kind of player I am, like what my strengths are, just like being confident in them. And then, yeah, I guess like opportunity, when you get an opportunity, you know, the classic saying, like when preparation meets opportunity. Pretty much been working hard for a long time and, yeah, the opportunities popped up. So just, yeah, grabbing it with two hands.
What I love about your story is you've been prepared to go anywhere to get that opportunity, and you've travelled all around the world, all around Australia. Tell us a bit about the craziness of your travels and how it's changed the way you play.
Yeah. So first I moved up to Townsville as a development player for 6 months before I went to college. So I was like kind of getting a little bit more experience of living away from home. So I went to Townsville for that, then went straight to College of America, North Carolina, so on the other side of America, pretty much as far as you can get, and then did college there for 4 years, which really was a cool experience because it was, you know, America plays definitely a different style of play to Australia. It's more, I'd say it's more probably more one-on-one dominated, more like craft. You got to like create your own. So that just like helped build my game in that sense. And then, yeah, came back, played like half a NBL one season. Was tossing up like Europe or WNBL, ended up getting Melbourne Boomers and played there again under Chris, which is again probably more of like a structured style of play, which just, yeah, obviously is just like helps you play in that kind of style. And then, yeah, Perth popped up and I was just like choosing between teams. But, yeah, I thought this one probably suits me the best out of all the teams. All the teams I've probably played in. So, yeah.
And you've travelled around for NBL 1 as well. Like, it's not like you even stay.
NBL 1, yes.
You don't even stay in the same state for the off season.
Yeah, no, I did do Mackay for half a season. Then it was Mount Gambier in the South League last season, but I think I'm going to stay home this season. So
have you found that traveling helps you just to, you can settle into any environment? You have to meet new people constantly. You have to understand new game plans constantly. Do you think that being on the move all the time has allowed you to settle into any environment?
Yeah, I think it's like a good, it's kind of like a good skill to learn just to be able to mold into any environment. I'm a pretty friendly person. I do like meeting new people, so I don't struggle with that too much. But in terms of like basketball and just learning new plays, it constantly gets your mind like just focused for when, you know, if you make a team and you got like a tournament, like example, like an Opals team or something, you got 2 weeks to learn like 13 plays. It just helps you constantly be on the kind of like alert of learning new things. Kind of like shift.
Take us back to your time at Duke. It's such a famous college and such a famous basketball program. What's it like when you step into that sort of an environment?
Yeah, pretty wild, to be honest. Such a surreal and once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Yeah, obviously Duke's a super famous basketball school, so being on the basketball team or the women's basketball team was a pretty big deal. Pretty crazy in terms of fans. Americans definitely go hardcore when they love something. Just playing in the Cameron, obviously it's very historic, and against like UNC, our major rival, or South Carolina, would have like sellout games with like 9,500 people watching. So, yeah, it was a pretty awesome experience and definitely something, I wouldn't trade up.
So is there a celebrity factor when you're over there? Like, it looks like it from over here when we're on the outside looking in. But when you're in that system, are you as big as we think you are?
Yeah, you're definitely up there. Yeah, it's a bit like weird because obviously, you're like a college student athlete. But, you are quite a big deal there, especially if you're on the basketball team. Yeah.
And is there much interaction between the men's teams and the women's teams, or are you totally separate in terms of the bonding side of things? As I said, such a famous joint, do they pull you all together as much as possible, or are you not really having anything to do with each other?
It's pretty separate, but, yeah, like definitely, you know, met all of them, saw Coach K quite a few times because we train the same facilities and everything. So you're definitely, like, bumping in and chatting. Even worked down the gym with Coach K. He was like doing a bench press, actually pretty heavy, pretty crazy. Yeah, so you definitely like interact with them, but in terms of like, yeah, training off court stuff, it's pretty separate. Yeah.
I reckon I'd be intimidated by seeing Coach K. How were you when you walk into the same place as him?
Yeah, honestly, he was something I was a little bit starstruck. Because obviously he's an absolute legend, but I was like, I don't know how often I'd see him. So, yeah, I start up like a few chats and that and chat to him in the elevator and everything. So that was pretty cool, yeah. And he knew my name by the end of it, so it was awesome.
That's very cool. And your coach, she's coached the America at 3x3 for the Olympics. So how impactful was she given you've been playing 3x3 for Australia lately?
Yeah. So she came in my junior year. We had like a coaching change. Which unfortunately that year we didn't even get to play. So my junior year was pretty much just training all year, but we did a lot of 3x3, which was super helpful because, she coaches the USA 3x3 team. So she's got, you know, she was teaching us like the plays she runs, kind of like the style you want to be playing that. So it, yeah, kind of opened up that realm of understanding, like the 3x3 game, which ultimately led to me getting a trial for the Australian 3x3 and, yeah, it definitely helped with just, understanding the game and getting a little bit of an extra edge because I did that for like a year with the USA coach, so, yeah.
The 3x3 is taking on such a big role within Australian sport now. Like, and we've seen what Annerley has done, who obviously you're playing with now. Do you believe that's a big part of your future or do you focus on trying to get to the Opals? Like, how do you work out which way you want to head because they're almost different sports?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So 3x3 is really taking off and it's such a fun style of play. It's the real it's a real breakdown of basketball, pretty much. Can you beat the man one-on-one? And then if the help rotates, it's just that extra pass. Honestly, I'm down to play any possible Australian team that I can, whether that's 3x3 or that's Opals. Anyway, I can sneak a spot in there. Both obviously unreal games, played 5v5 my whole life, but, do love 3x3 as well.
Who taught you to shoot? Because it's quite phenomenal to watch you in action.
Oh, thank you. I've actually got to give credit to my under-12s coach, who was quite an instrumental person teaching me just like the proper form and everything. And then my national performance coach, Leonard King, kind of like elevated my shot to like the next level in terms of when I was like 15, just like moving my shot higher and everything and quicker release. So major credits to them. And then pretty much just reps. If you ask people, I definitely get a lot of shots up because I know that's my strength. So, yeah, repetition, classic. Practice makes perfect.
Practice does make perfect. And you got Adelaide on Saturday night this week at the Bendat Basketball Centre at 6:30. And it was against Adelaide last season when you were playing for Melbourne, where you had your breakout game, 5 from 5 from the land of plenty. Take me inside your head that night.
I was told to get a bit of opportunity in that game. I was just ready for the ball. When it landed in my hands and I had some space, I knew, to do what my strength is and that to shoot it. So, you know, a few went in. Pretty exciting, and then managed to get 5 out of 5. I was like super happy with that, and obviously we had a great point guard and like Tiff Mitchell feeding me a lot of assists, so it was pretty great game, not gonna lie. I did enjoy it, and then also was happy that we got a pretty good win out of it too.
So you mentioned at the start that you began your career at Townsville as a development player. Did you have a ring from that year? You only got on court a couple of times, but do you get a ring when you're a DP and the team wins the championship?
Yeah. So totally got a ring. I only hit the court a few times, but got a three in one of them. But we won the whole thing, and I do have a ring. Back home in my room. So that was pretty cool, not going to lie. Hopefully you can get another one.
Absolutely right. You played with some amazing players in that team. Who's really influenced you from a WNPL perspective?
From WNPL? Yeah, so many players, honestly. It's been really cool, actually. Last year I got to play alongside Christy Wallace, and she's a Brisbane girl, so I actually grew up, she's quite a few years older than me, but I grew up watching her. She's definitely been – like someone I've looked up to, and then playing with her last season was really cool. But now, since professional, it's kind of like open, so you can play with them. And then Susie Bakovich, obviously, back in Townsville, she was just an absolute professional, so it was really cool just seeing the way that she worked and the leader she was. But, so many people, honestly, that have, really inspired me.
And now you're playing with some really good players in this team, Annalie Maley, Erin McDonald. What's it like when you step into a team with players like that who can help to make you even better?
Oh, so exciting. No, honestly. It's really awesome because, everyone's got their strengths, and, it's really cool to just, learn off everyone, Erie playing the WNBA and just, her mindset and everything, and Maley just her grit and hustle. And Amy's obviously just, an absolute knockdown shooter. So, no, it's really exciting. I get to play with these guns, and, hopefully we can make something happen.
So Annalie was our guest last week, and she's got her fiancé Marina Whittle in town from Spain at the moment. You got engaged earlier this year. They say Disneyland is the happiest place on earth. You weren't at the actual Disneyland, but you were in your happiest place on earth. Take me into that moment.
Yes, actually, this was insane. I'll do a little condensed version. I was actually playing Sydney, and it was a couple of days after my sister's birthday, and she lives down in Sydney. So I just asked if I could stay an extra day after the game to hang out with her. And they're like, no worries. So I was thinking it was just to celebrate with my sister. And there was this 100 years at Alexander Grounds of Disney celebrations. So we're like, oh my gosh, let's go there. So I brought an outfit and everything. And then next minute I'm there walking down. So we got our nails done. My sister said, she's like, oh, I'll shout you because you're hearing that. So I was like, okay, unreal, random but unreal. And then we're walking down to the grounds, and there's a photographer, and he's taking pictures, and he was like, oh, sorry, guys, we've just got some media to do. I'm like, oh, yeah, no worries. And then the photographer was like, actually, we need two people. So I ended up picking my sister and I. And then said, oh, we'll do solo photos. So he got me to stand underneath the castle. And then, he said, count on three, call at Disney. So I called at Disney. And then next minute, Josh pops out from behind the castle. And I was like, oh, my gosh, he's here for, a surprise visit. And then next minute, down on one knee. So honestly, it was, actually felt like a dream. Very magical day. And then to top it off, he said he couldn't come back to Melbourne. And then anyway, we're on the plane, the doors are about to close, and the next minute he comes on. So I actually felt like I was in a rom-com movie. It was pretty insane.
That's pretty remarkable. You must have, are you a Disney fan? Did you feel like the Disney princess, the stereotypical Disney program?
Oh, for sure, 100%. Yeah, definitely a big Disney fan. Went there when I was went on a family vacation when I was 5 years old. So definitely has a special place in my heart. And, definitely felt like a Disney princess. It was unreal, actually.
And are you one of those relationships where you can't have your partner with you because he's got an actual job somewhere else and you're playing basketball all over the country? are you seeing him at the moment, or is he somewhere interstate or overseas?
So he's currently in Brisbane, but he is coming December 10th. He does has his own pest control business. So it is flexible, but hopefully soon once we're married and that, he can move his job if I stay somewhere. He can move his job and, yeah, create a client base there.
Do you have a date yet? Do you have a date for the actual wedding?
Yeah, I do actually. August 31st after the NBL One season.
Very cool. Well, congratulations. Yeah. Hopefully the preparations for that are really good, and hopefully the rest of the season goes really well, and we hope that you can outwit, outplay and outlast the competition this season from Survivor
yes.
style, and the Lynx win the championship. So thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, really appreciate it too.
So that's it for this week's episode of the Dribble Podcast. Thanks to John Rilley and Mila Goodchild for their time. Thanks to the brilliant Josh Cable for all of his production work. Remember, you can read all of your basketball news in the West Australian and at thewest.com.au. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Dribble Podcast.